This is the author's note for Ignorance and Polypolitics, the audio version by the author. It's important that you know that there are graphs and pictures and graphics in the book that would further help you understand the work that's made available in the book form, that it's not in the audio form. I have often talked about my problems with the cyber attacks on PayPal that I believe are infringing upon my civil, economic, and intellectual freedom. But to further express how toxic this problem has been to me, I will say clearly, we have to end that PayPal terrorism. We have to end the 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 PayPal terrorism. This book is provided free, and any donation in support of my efforts is appreciated. Any donation in the larger realm to help end the PayPal terrorism is also very much appreciated. Just make sure that if you give anything significant, report it to either the IRS or the FBI, because it's very important to me that we end this problem. I have a lot of good things in mind for next year, and I'm hoping that I can that together we can achieve them all. Enjoy the book. Thank you.
All rights, including the right to reproduce this book in any way, shape, or form, belong to the author. No reproduction in whatever form or manner may be done without the prior consent of the author and publisher. Ignorance and Polypolitics. Edulogics. Copyright 2020 Edulogics. Ignorance and Polypolitics. If strangeness was to be perceived and conceived within the scope of some expected set of strangeness, then it must defy the rules within the scope of the set and that of its expected domain. Within this body of work, the domains for our comparative models will be the dimensional aspects of relativistic entities, fields, spheres, and other influencing activity relative to an observer. It is no longer sufficient to define the normative without the specifications of its domain. If an object was to be two-dimensional and dense, its density being its most important attribute, there must occur in natural reality some attributes it holds and some attributes it rigidly cannot have. Being two-dimensional, while it has magnitude, it will have no self-sustainable magnitude, which is important to its ability to project a self-directed movement. It will have no direction. It will be impossible to call it a conscious entity. It may have aspects of conscious life, but it will be the fully conscious aspects, the aspects it lacks, which makes it ignorant in relevant dimensions of knowledge necessary for reality. If this object was relative to an entity equipped with both magnitude and direction, it becomes an aspect, some retrogressive phenomena of the entity's magnitude and direction, rather than an entity fractional as part and capable of three-dimensional animations in its space-time. The two-dimensional object has a dissolute existential relativity with the object owning magnitude and direction. It also has dissolute ignorance relatively, which is absolute in the aspects of scope, ken, and consciousness. It has no depth, breadth, reach, domain, perception, or cognizance. If life was an epitaph written on a joker's memoir, then peace is a blunder of willful unknowing. It is the buffoonish whims of rapid tantrums done on a constant call to bliss and self-satisfaction, never to witness that thirst for the uncomfortable reins of distress. Misery cannot come to it. It has neither the depth of sensation nor the breadth of substantiality. If misery comes to life, which it does in every fashion life sustains, the willful unknowing cannot hear the calls. Such, nature calls the willful unknowing as it may the willing knowledgeable, as whimsical exhibitions of its inversion aversion therapy, complex but truly revealing an informational glitch natural in the making, one, likened to the driest tongue in a world immersed in water, the other, the dripping moist void ill-recognizable as an architectonic or substantial self. One holds relevance to space, the other to identity, reaching for one while inadvertently tied to another. There is an impenetrable sense to an origin which can never deter the force of origination nor the alteration of ends. That is, the true origination can never absorb or sustain ignorance either from the authentication of its origination or the truly relative self-transformative evolution from the space-time alterations of its ends. As ends can gain distinctions through the differentiations of their means, all inversion-aversion therapies as they arise are always means for the architectonic, self-transforming substantial self. The two-dimensional object is relatively non-architectonic and insubstantial rather than consubstantial or co-substantial. A prime example of such inversion-aversion therapies is the representation of something basal as something abysmal. They're both differentiable dimensionally. Something abysmal, for example, will appear to have some formative direction dual formational with some projected magnitude. A basal authentication will incapacitate a significant immeasurable essence of the abysmal. They cannot both account for the same differentiation of means. Another example of inversion-aversion therapies that are formative from two-dimensional placements is the placement of two things side by side and a projection of this onto space. An example of this in mathematics is the graph of x2 plus 1 slash x2. It looks like this. It is a regressively expressed science because it has no root on the x-axis. It doesn't know differentiation of any form relative to its representation, and it also has no origination or relativity to its most relevant significant domain nor its least relevant significant axis. Such, there is yet the joker's laughter in the background, like some ovarian cyst on a ceaseless formation of whimsical beginnings. The days are dry and warmth beats its drums at sea, a decaying mass school of base as laughter cannot own its immediate form. It must be transposed or disposed. Those in a hasty rush for change are already displaced and disposed from pre-perception. And the transmutation in the disposition never touches the pre-perceptive knowledge base. Ignorance pierces like a dream, overturned, a swift shiftless base, that northern Rhine of created, curet cultivated hierarchies flowing bloody hell down a bloody river towards a southern rain promising sublime bliss where no true knowledge can be encumbered. As I integrate the ignorance aspect of this book with the effects of such in a socio-political setting, polio-politics, an exploration of life lucid and fully enlivened with strife becomes necessary for my perspective on perceptual and conceptual knowledge. All explorations in this work will take more than one perspective to be fully realized, more than one dimension of integration differentiation to be fully absorbed. We travel the edges of ignorance but not without bringing realistic experiences and knowledge along. We must explore some dimensional dynamics. The default narrative of one dimensionality is with respect to time. And this is made possible because higher dimensions are imagined. It is one of such reason we are able to consider time as a linearity. This is problematic when we consider the fact that nothing is considered ignorant of time, even something non-existent, something strictly imagined. The assumption here is that two dimensionalities can be moved by taking the derivation of some actionable potential or vector through time. I disagree with this assumption and I seek to explain why this is so in this work. Two dimensionality creates surficial traces with two parameters. They are useful in being able to trace, say, a point A to a point B linked together, connected, surficial without an induced externalizing status. And by externalizing status here I mean there is no depth of perception because two dimensionalities are mainly tracers. The scientific belief is that if we put two dimensionalities within a differentiable framework, we can assume it knows movement or undergoes motion. This presumption is erroneous not just because of the one-dimensional time imposition but also because of the time travel not easily implicated in the assertions of differentiable activities involving motion. That is, by projecting time onto space as a necessary parameter in one dimension, we have assumed what we have never been able to achieve in reality, go back and forth in time. Displacing space does not imply losing time. And spatial reversal, for instance, from west to east and back westward neither account for any real spatial displacement nor a reversal in time. Three-dimensionality requires three parameters to qualify vectorization: a position, a point, movement from point to point with inducible externalizing statuses. And by statuses here, I mean external states attainable, positions, conditions, distinctions, station, or otherwise potentiality for vectorial activity. What life cannot deliver must be written down as a will of knowing or unknowing. I deliver shame not in its ignorant form but its sublime form, because I cannot deliver shame just the same, as I won't a remedy, the character's blunder, as a cause, the character. There is the character and there is the character's blunder. There is no true knowledgeable reality for either. Like some role designed for a play acted to a fault, I am besotted to the character's blunder so it may unravel its aims. The base, for instance, in the earlier example is the character, the play, and when the character projects a reality with magnitude and direction, becoming the character's blunder, the abyss thus becomes a play acted to a fault. The unraveling of nature and character through the suffragette dutifully unwelcomed becomes inevitably immaterial, immutable, immersed, transparticulate. And there are the many wheels of references within a framework of objective importance both on a personal and political stance that may be turned or unturned in the making of a character, and the consequential what may be the character's blunder shaping the socio-political reality of individuals within society. Both know ignorance to differing degrees. The base may be ignorant, and the abyss, being an active play of such ignorance, knows polio politics. I will take a stab in the back with as much grace as I will take a stage as a damsel in staggering squalor living out her life toothless and cold. That never comes cheap. And it is never ignorant. It is imbued with life lessons on aversion-inversion therapies. The unraveling of nature, character, and character's blunder through the suffering of never the same woman in substance, that is, a woman of substance must never suffer the same but must return with the character's blunder. The deeply seated immersion of scope through suffering and thought relative to the states within the perimeter of scope. If I enter a wilderness or desert as may be to suffer individuation, isolation, and strife, the strife will redirect my path. I will know the way as there is no other way than suffering, poverty, and squalor, but because of this inversion or immersion, so to speak, in this state, there is always one of life's aversion therapies waiting, some different immaterial way. I will neither suffer the same nor return the same. Must I not allow this individuation, the suffering, so I don't take the path of least resistance? The willful unknowing, the willing knowledge will be mine, but the willful unknowing will never light my path. I will never return the same. Here we must start to link the relativity between ignorance and knowledge. There is the conception of the universe as constantly expanding, which is founded on the modeling principle of the physical world as three-dimensional. To have a differential relativity between ignorance and knowledge, we need to go beyond this three-dimensional conception of the world. It is necessary that we do so intelligently. The mathematical and physical interpretation of a world that is constantly expanding is one that is constantly divergent. This implication cannot be impossible to uncover because of the mode of expansion, the time means of vectorization being one-dimensional and projected. And the constantly expanding reality must also confront the issue of containment implicating itself in the expansion as both means and mode. Time enters a means to the projection and leaves an irreconcilable differential. The constant expansion becomes calculable as the seeming antidote to ignorance, carrying itself beyond all conceivable thresholds without necessarily having the conscious awareness of its own ongoing, compelled by some force, impelled by some movement. Three-dimensionality implicates both animate and inanimate objects, forces verifiable or otherwise unknown, essences visible or otherwise veiled, experiences tenable or otherwise untenable, bottom lines tangible or otherwise intangible, and other activities of potentialities. It imposes perception of the physical world. It does not go beyond the premises of perception. This invokes the need for a fourth-dimensional imposition in the physical world. Fourth dimensionality imposes phenomenal consciousness. That is, the awareness of oneself, all senses and all processes stemming from the level of perceptibility of such awareness. It adds awareness to conception from perception. The phenomenal consciousness implied by the fourth dimensionality here must know convergence. Fifth dimensionality holds the imposition of space and space-time integrity because time-space events occurring in the fourth dimension has no accordance. That is, there is a limitation to awareness estranged from the medium of space-time event activities. Space, matter, time, motion, the pre-perception aspects, post-perception aspects, temporal homogeneity, and more we are going to discuss later all occur in the fifth dimension. The first four fingers of the human hand can be likened to the first four dimensions. They are much closer together rather than spatially estranged. And the fourth and fifth dimensions are shared between the index finger and the thumb. The two are important to the movement and projections of space, and the underline for this will be made clear further in the explications in this book. There is as much spatial knowledge in human anatomy and physiology as there can be in the cellular design patterns like fingerprint, palm prints, and footprints used to determine identity. There is a buffer zone between the fourth and fifth dimensions that understands modality in the realms of what I term, the three E's, existence, experience, expression. And this is where the main differences between ignorance and knowledge is made, where there is necessity for convergence alongside divergence. There are also three major ways of viewing ignorance from contrasting perspectives, the three T's, transitory, transmutable, and transgressive. Extending and animating activity potentials is essential, so here I deliver shame, a conception I have engaged personally as essentially a platform for the conception of the ease and TS of the buffer zone so I can absorb and analyze inversion aversion therapies. The transitory, transmutable, and transgressive becomes a conceptual nonpolar monopole dipole states found in the workings of the mind, especially in terms of strife and stress, a perceptive view, a state of mind in accordance with the view, an induction of a realistic emotive intellective correlation of states, an elevation of mind, so to speak. Third dimensionality is at present the universal model for physical things, entities, existences conceivable and perceptible in the physical world and must be very much subject within the limits of the E's and the T's. And I have reason not just to move beyond third dimensionality but to move against it. Thus the conceptual aspect of the conceptual nonpolar monopole dipole of the states of the mind states must be incepted in three dimensionalities to know conceptual derivation or integration, a rule that must be adopted to create a reasonable reach against ignorance which can be misinterpreted for knowledge in first dimensionality. The base in the case of ignorance is the state prescribed in any status quo rather than the superimposition of time prescribed in the first dimension. Because we have ensured derivation and integration within the conceptual, we place the conceptual in the first dimension, creating a nonpolar second dimension as a template for conceptual perception. The monopole incepts the third dimension and the dipole must occur in the fourth. Thus it is qualifiable, rather than the immeasurable attachment of time to linearity in the first dimension, and verifiable, a measure of an imposed fourth dimensionality relative to the fifth. Understanding of pre-post-perception states of mind in such times of active potentiality ranging from great excitement to great distress, which enables knowledge rather than ignorance. Ignorance is the uncertain appearance with the uncertain loss, a base, an abyss, neither, both, none, as life confronts space-time events with little to no resolution. Knowledge must always have a base, however, its appearance, because ignorance always has in the least the appearance of a base invested in the first dimension as time, which by the terms of its inception and form is invested as linear progression and therefore has no limit. With extreme individuation and distress bridging the conceptual fragmentation of self-knowledge in times of duress as base and the disintegration of de-individuation as the abyss, and the two opposing perspectives ensures that individuation must occur for knowledge to occur. So here I deliver void, so we can explore vacant plots of erroneous conceptualizations of the E's and T's affecting humanity and relativity between the class constructs of society and consequently socio-political and economic reality. Scientific unreality and reality can shape socio-political and economic reality, and such they are not merely playthings for idiots or be it narcissistic fools who call themselves scientists anymore. They are diseases in genetics, viruses in medicine, natural world disasters in physics, things that could never have afforded the ignorance of their scientific approaches, perceptions, conceptions, and those other things in life that cannot afford to be treated with superficial effects or worthless ignorance. They are in essence problems for all of us, for humanity at large, and must not be merely left to those who have degrees but are blind to the very troubling effects of science on individual lives. If you map natural science wrongly, it will map and approach you unexpectedly, wrongly. Imagine if scientists couldn't predict some natural disaster that could wipe out the state of Texas and affect the neighboring states. They would have done something wrong when they did not know what they weren't doing was very wrong. Sometimes it takes an outsider to point out some terrible wrongdoing, some ill-coveted harm otherwise unapparent to a cocooned observer. Aversion-inversion therapies are easily adopted and made integratable as norms in society ever too easily. Therefore, there are often times when it becomes necessary to take flights from the generally prescribed scientific reality in order to truly understand, rectify, refine, reform or indulge whatever else may be necessary for its worthwhile actuality. The harsher these flights are from these prescriptions, the more the need to confront aversion-inversion therapies. And in the body of this work, we explore whether pre-perception and post-perception have procured legs for such rational, intellectual, economic and political flights of necessities and where they may be. Here I start this conversation on a consideration essential to life. Is flight for survival for the individual the same as flight towards the evolution of the species in the socio-political setting? And because it is essential to create realistic examples in this body of work, I must invoke the aversion-inversion therapy of placing two things side by side to induce existence and the projection of such on toward an upward infinitesimally divergent relativity progression on the table. This effort takes me first to the need to involve a little physics, that which involves the need to root some existence or the other within the possible conceptual and perceptual framework of the space-time fifth dimensionality framework. It becomes inevitable, as was discussed earlier, that time being participant in divergence as well as convergence from first dimensionality, must know convergence and divergence at the same time. It would have to have time as a parameter which instantly makes it a vector in one dimensionality. And from this I find that the basal one-dimensionality factor is subject to gravitational effect, while the upper fourth to fifth dimensional migration introduced in this work have a different migration for gravitational effect. The only possible projection of weight as a vector ensure the influence of gravitational pull, that is a downward imposition force. But the spatial gravity we must impose on the very superficial surfaces of Earth cannot experience gravitational pull in the same manner. While the downward gravitational pull makes weight enforceable, the spatial gravitational pull makes weight negligible as it becomes apparent it must follow the universal laws of spatial motion. Here is a hand-drawn representation of the differences. The spherical A is spatial with negligible weight. The equation for and the full explanation of the upper sphere and the inner suspension will be available in the work titled An Animated Life, ALU in short term, scheduled for release in 2021. B and D are fully subject to gravitational pull and are detachable triangles. C tells an entirely different story with a direct spatial relativity with the sphere. C is also subject to more physics than this book on ignorance can occupy. While the upper part of the diagram was rendered in three dimensionalities in ALU, for the purposes of aversion-inversion therapies in this book, we're going to hold the rendering in two dimensionalities complying with all rendering outside the sphere. The line tangent to the upper sphere is what renders three dimensionalities in this case, and it will help us with some differentiable distinction later. This figure can be viewed without the unexpected lower tangent line in the meantime. If we detach the detachable triangles B and D, there must be what must be the anti-gravitational inner triangle C made possible by the spherical A, and for us to be able to explore this conception we need to explore and use diamagnetism because of the decreasing necessitation surrounding the permeability of free space and the need for space to return to space relative to the sphere. The linearity of time is least relevant here and vectorization of a source is the most relevant. Movement, vectorization necessitates the relativity of space to space. How long or short this occurs is least relevant to a viable force's ability to make this space-time event or occurrence undergo and no mobility. Because there is an induced magnetic field on Earth relative to the larger fifth dimensionality of space that must connect back to Earth through time, first dimensionality prescribed through conception and perception of integration and the fourth dimension, the reasonable dimensionality for conception, we need a diamagnetic material to help us navigate the premises and parameters involved in the diagram. There is none better for the representation than the diamagnetism of solid lead with relative permeability close to unity 0.99984 h/m. And from here I want you to be aware of every step I take. I need to separate the 0.999 from 0.00084 and bring the 0.00084 back to the zero before the decimal point. Here you may view the 999 as TTT, which must be estranged from the 3ES so conceptual existence can be incepted and space-time events must return to space-time events with integrity. This is very important because the 3TS, in this case 999, are not vectored and the E needs to be vectored for realistic conceptual existence of the fourth dimension's return to rational conceptual integration with integrity. With the permeability of free space being 4π × 10⁷, the number we need is 4π × 10⁷, x 0.99984, which gives 1.256439995060876×10⁶ h/m. The 999 is underlined here so it can easily be observable that there has been mobility never caused by TTT, the 999 in this case. I must depict this as 0.1256×10⁵ for the purposes of explaining the fact that the 999 was never responsible for the vectorization and that there has been a cross of 0.00084 towards the zero before the decimal. But beyond that, there is a more important reason for this. This shows that there is indeed a need not just for a conceptual fourth dimensional integrity but also a need for a fifth dimensional space-time coherence. How do we achieve this? I have already started by putting the 1 after the decimal point because it is a return to the TTT same as 999. It is a return for the E that has no conceptual phenomenal conscious reality. Neither the 999 nor the TTT nor the 1 can achieve this return for the E, and to ensure this is a true return not for the 1, the TTT or the 999, we can divide 1256, the decimal removed for simplicity, by 12, the numbers of displacement, replacement for the removal of the 0.00084, or rather for the sake of simplicity 0.000084. The answer becomes 104.66666666667. We can now see the first dimensionality relative to fourth. But we need to further explore this so we can fully conceptualize this reality. We are en route to the implication of the side-by-side illusion science, which affords us with x2 + 1/x2. It would seem from the graph that the equation is divergent and forever divergent. From an acute perspective, which is necessitated in this case, it becomes apparent that due to the fact that it has neither foundation nor root from the plane of projection, it cannot be relative to the plane but rather to some projected external resultant. It is superficially or rather artificially divergent, a facade. What I am going to do now is create something divergent and convergent at the same time, as I proposed time must be, to know perceptual and conceptual conscious reality. I will do this with two different but relatable equations. I am going to create a rooted two-dimensional depictions in the first quadrant with a fourth-dimensional propensity possibility. We can do this with the equation y equals 4x1 slash 4. The graphic below depicts the perpetually divergent reality strictly possible in the first quadrant. What does it mean for something to be going forward in the same quadrant as an expression of space-time event progression without any impossibility of time reckonable? That is, what is the implication of moving forward with the linearity of time in the same quadrant? Is there redefinition possible for time and spatial propensities other than what we know of them? That a curve is simply more or less a straight line. Could these strict similarities be possible despite hyperbolic equations having differentiable qualities? They are indeed differentiable trigonometric functions and will be discussed briefly in this book for future books. Meanwhile, the superficial divergence depicted in the graph is not easily conquered. To get remotely close, we have to surmount several hurdles. There has to be a limit, that is, there must be a limitation where this equation pretends to propagate a perpetual approach infinitesimal extensions. That is, there is a limit as x approaches infinity for the equation. This limit, as strangely as it may sound at the moment, is relative to the deception of placing two things side by side. Where is the reality of such a limit? This approach is a little bit more complex in the realms of physics and mathematics, but simply put, I'm going to take the illusion as well as the deception away by making the very important but simple move of finding the realistic limit. We must think of limits and differentials particularly here, as they must be able to confirm some sort of possible vectorized phenomenal consciousness. That is, we must calculate the limit as x goes to infinity of d/dx for x1/4. This is easily shown by a scientific calculator to be zero. This is also made obvious by the graph, the reason it must become factual that the graph cannot go beyond the first quadrant. While the knowledge is easily depicted, the two-dimensional graph defy this differential fact. Keeping in mind conscious reality and our possible vectorized phenomenal consciousness, must know both integration and differentiation. That is, what is integrateable must be differentiable. There is also that question of containment, that is, a containable projection for x on the xy coordinate system, as we must discuss this with respect to polio politics. It is necessary but not possible on this coordinate system because the x-plane is never vertical, so we must make the fourth dimension relative to the x, which may be unimaginable at the moment but fulfills the purpose of projecting a phenomenal consciousness for x, which allows conscious knowledge rather than a one- or two-dimensional projection of elevated ignorance. Thus the revelation of a different and necessitating logic behind plotting y equals 4x1/4. We discuss the dimensionality briefly as the rendering should be understood. If you place your thumb on the y-axis facing downward and extend your hand in the direction of the curve, you will find it is the distance between your index finger and thumb. The fifth dimension is phenomenal consciousness, perception of externally extended space relative to itself, contractive and expansive, that is relative to the x-coordinate. And this can easily be deciphered as the space between my thumb and my index finger at all times. The application of this understanding with respect to two humanly enabled hands is a subject for a different book. The limit as x goes to negative infinity of d/dx for x1/4 turns out to be undefined, unknown, or impossible as a numeric value. It is another reason our equation cannot go beyond the first quadrant, and yet it progresses some perpetual infinity in it relative to the y-axis. Something must be wrong. There must be a problem or more than one of such problems as x goes to infinity. What is the implication of this perpetual journey into a perpetual first quadrant reality, or as Einstein may term it, a black hole? The implication here is devastating to reality. In other words, there is more irrationality attached to the Cartesian coordinate that must be addressed in this lifetime, and more expectation of such will be discussed in the end of this body of work. Meanwhile, the limit of the derivative as x goes to negative infinity is truly important to the diagram of the sphere maligned with detachable outer triangles and an inner one, which may turn the laws of physics in universal terms upside down. Our first step in taking the illusion as well as the deception away is by invoking what you must fully understand eventually as aversion-inversion therapies imposed upon natural science. That is, I have to impose the ill reality of two-dimensionally sustained inversion therapy over the unrooted reality of placing two things side by side. This is done by dividing 4x1/4 by x2+1/x2, which gives 4x9/4/x2+1, or rather 4x9/4/1+x2. There is emphasis on the denominator of this solution because 1/1+x2 is the derivative of the arctangent, and 1/1+x2 is the derivative of the arcot, the arc of the arctangent. With this differential equation identified, we plot 4x1/4 and 4x9/4 in the first quadrant, and we get the intercept we need. We still have much work to do, but we're making our way across. Here is the depiction of our equations. It becomes obvious that we have achieved this limit which seemed impossible ordinarily. We have achieved this limit as x goes to infinity at x equals 1 and y equals 4, and the limit as x goes to negative infinity relative to y is 0. This is a superficial two-dimensional projection. It also appears we have achieved integration and differentiation potential. It also becomes clear that we can link this limit to the permeability of space with 104.66666666667. The differentiation potential is more important in this case because any potential vectorization must occur in a life-affirming differentiation of conscious reality, while the space-time event integration holds the conscious coherent existence. It is often assumed through reasons which can now be recognized as ignorant that we merely have to reckon with gravity with respect to Earthian space. It must be apparent that what we consider to be free space, the permeability of space, and the universality of space alongside the very difficult pathogenic conceptuality of time and space in general must be reckonable. For instance, the first quadrant's one-dimensional vectorization migration is an absolute impossibility, throwing the linearity of time used for any measure of progression out completely. Like some silent reprimand creeping into the consciousness and instigator of a midlife crisis, there is no good remedy for integrate-able conscious reality without derivation. A non-consequential insubstantial space-time event interface that is something thought up but never thought down. A travesty, so to speak, to all possible institution of thought. Now we are going to embark on a tedious but necessary journey to find a true and sustainable tangential reality for our equations. This journey is tedious because it requires knowledge and coherent phenomenal consciousness. We cannot just draw any line. We need one passing through the intersect of the two curves. While we are on this journey, we can incur and induce the numbers conventional science has thought us to use in these instances relative to the y. We can try the line y equals x, which is very essential to the Cartesian coordinate system. And after that trial, we can try y equals x plus 1.0 to 1.9, or we can try y equals x plus 2.0 to 2.9. The equation for the line is y equals x plus 3. Here is the depiction. I have already surmised the southern misery as one impossible to quench. That is, there is no tangential line possible for the lower part of the graph. But it will be unreasonable to simply take my word for it. We must find out why this may appear to be so, and why we cannot have the appearance be reckonable in any natural scientific reality. This is also tedious in every sense of the word because we have to own a reasonable measure of perceptive and conceptual reality to do this. We need to have a claim to phenomenal consciousness to be able to do this, that is, we have to assume a fourth-dimensional to fifth-dimensional relativity paradigm and a return to coherent consciousness. We must resolve the permeability of space induced earlier in this body of work within the framework of any possible tangential equation. The equation we must use to project a lower tangential possibility is y equals x, 1/8, from the 0.1256 used in the free space equation earlier. It's best we acknowledge beforehand that the discovery we must make does not need trained eyes but rather a phenomenal one. From a strictly perceptive non-conceptual point of view, we may think that the line is reasonably tangential if we plot it. But as necessary as it is to have a qualifying differentiable limit as a point, a substance, some essence gets smaller and smaller, nearer and nearer, closer and closer, or as the relevance may be inclined to validate, it is necessary that the tangential line touches at least some point on the curve. A first and ignorant look at the potential lower tangential line gives this depiction. The reality, once you zoom in on the depiction of the tangential possibility, looks like this. There is something else about the graphic representation of our equations that makes it true, substantial, and valid. And before I share the reasoning behind the need to solidify the limit as true and authentic Cartesian adoptable standards, for the purpose of conceptualization I will like to share the graph of arctan x and 4x9/4 so it can have a comparative view against the lower tangential seeming possibility view. Here it is. Here are the data for the two equations. which pretty much remain the same except for the last one. There is no change whatsoever between the relativity from -2 to 1. At 2, an ignorant perspective may see a large differential between 4.756825 and 19.027314. There is no such differential, as much as the counterfactual could be obvious. Whatever could that mean? There is an obvious difference between the two numbers. In fact, the difference between the two is 14.2704855. How can there be no differential between them when the difference seems obvious numerically? But this differential number is significantly illusory, dimensionally irrational. In fact, it is apparent there is no such differential or progression possible in the first quadrant, no differentiable or integrateable attribute or element. Dividing 19.027314 by 4.756825 gives the number 4, and exactly 4. There is no such differential. If it had any, it would be the RNA of pure lead, or rather pitch darkness, propagating contained/containable space. So much for that black hole Einstein and other scientists are chasing, which has had the capability to go on and on and on high on the engineered multiplicity of the same exact thing. That there is no limitation? We must come to the proximal and distal propensities of contraction and expansion eventually. And the 1-to-2 dimensional surficial non-revolution reality relative to the larger dimensional physical universal space makes any possibility of progression ultimately impossible. Here, for instance, is an alternate universe of the side-by-side summation equation, the first quadrant containment of x2 and d1/x2. The upper intersection reads x, y, as 1, 1, or as I will rather, x, y. A lot of modern physics and mathematics is based on the Cartesian coordinate system. Undermining it is nothing easy, and my investment in it is dedicated in thought with time and effort. But the real effort will be embedded not in bland scientific necessity, but rather socio-political authenticity and scientific integrity. A lot of politics and science is highly integrated into the socio-political. In fact, it is easily argued that sometimes science as well as religion become the platforms for information, misinformation, intentional or otherwise an honest mistake, just or otherwise prejudiced, and more of such tendencies. It is frightening to know that these tendencies harden over time, becoming ill-recognizable versions of aversion-inversion therapies easily justifiable by the status quo. There is need for this beyond enlightenment. There are those who suffer, mostly in silence, as remnants and inherent inheritors of these aversion-inversion therapies over time, and are sometimes further silenced in shame, oppression, or otherwise lack of opportunities for economic elevation or recovery. There is always need for elucidation. There is also the incessant need to conquer the normative depending on class structure and other socio-political hierarchies. We should explore the case of sexual orientation conversion therapies, for instance. Religion and the socio-political larger reach reached out to science to help solve a problem that was ignorantly diagnosed a disorder. And the ignorance was from a lack of the fourth dimensional reality and the absence of the consideration for a fourth to fifth dimensional reality relativity back to conscious coherence, that is, an abject and absolute lack of respect for individuality founded on the tenets, however erroneous, of psychotherapeutic adoption, adaptation, which ruined innocent lives. From the minds of men will come the undoing of men, the aversion, the belief that no normal man could possibly feel this somewhat erroneous way for another of the same gender necessitates a rendering of reality completely biased on the possibility of the state both perceptively and conceptually. And thus a need for correction, as it were, some disease of the mind rendering the psychosexual capacity of a man prescriptive to expected norms rather than the reality of its inclinations. That is, it was a perceptive rather than conceptual diagnosis. While conceptual norms are prescribed in psychiatry by genuine signs and symptoms of extreme strays from expected norms, pedophilia and bestiality for instance, these norms are no doubt prescribed by men from the limitations of their minds relative to other men, the biases mark the knowledge. There are diseases among us that are beyond physio-anatomical prescriptions, I must say. And the worst of this is the pervasive acceptance of ignorance as knowledge base, because an ignorant knowledge base never changes and never attempts redemption. In the states of strife, that of extreme harshness I have personally experienced in homelessness, because I had lost every material thing I could have clung to and became basal within socio-political standards. Phenomenal consciousness became my preoccupation and the suffragette became the inevitable, the immaterial, and I was never again scared of the basal. There are worse people in the prescribed socio-political hierarchy who would malign without redemption the innocence of others I should be more afraid to associate with. They don't come with warnings. The conceptual remedy in this case is the perceptive blunder. The knowledge prescribed and enabled in aversion-inversion therapies are rather ignorant devaluation of individual and fundamental human rights. And the states of mind with which supposed knowledgeable and educated men uphold these erroneous derivations from expected norms and prescribe to it is rather alarming. There is this inevitable truth, that if the state of helplessness cannot be overcome in the fifth dimension, the state of liberty is a desolation construct in the third dimension. And this is mainly based on my introduction of the very necessary fourth and fifth dimensions. It becomes unimaginable for me that the reach of existence is limited to third dimensionality. First quadrant, finite dimensionality vector space? Infinite dimensionality vector space? What truly qualifying vector space could explain or dissuade first quadrant dimensionality dilemma? Contraction is very important for fourth to fifth dimensional relativity, coherence, and also fifth to first dimensional coherence. Phenomenal consciousness is not reckonable until fourth dimensionality is achieved. Thus, containment in the fourth dimensionality paradigm is contraction in the fifth dimensionality paradigm. They cannot be mutually exclusive. We have the extended contradiction relative to the space-time universal theory of a progressively expanding universe. If spatial contraction is hugely differentiable from the theoretical universal expansion, is our conception of life and space-time existence correct at all? Is it close to either contraction death or non-fluid, disconnected myocardial infarction? Expansion will necessitate a sixth dimensional paradigm, and here we cannot afford to assume it must not come back to one dimensionality in the first instance that time is necessitated in one dimensionality. In the second instance, it is the expansion of a necessitated contraction. Also here we must encounter problems unless we remove phenomenal consciousness from both the fifth to sixth dimensionality relativity and sixth to first dimensionality relativity. That is, the universe as constantly expanding becomes a conceptual error. It is too big to know perception, so the conception is ignorant of third dimensionality. And this becomes inevitable. The severance between fifth dimensionality and third dimensionality is grave and must be accounted for conceptually. Conceptual hierarchies are unthinkable. There is no easy or short path to becoming an authentic self. The proximal I get to them, the more apparent it becomes that they are not just unthinkable but untouchable as well. They are superbly involuntary and exceptionally individualized. But physics has the attribute of revelation, however unkempt and hazardous its path to its very own redemption over the course of time. And here I must incept the dimensional perspective of time. Whatever must time do to redeem itself while its projected first dimensional linearity has no such redeeming qualities? The larger universal space honor revolutions, not because of some sort of choice but inevitably so. That's the natural workings of universal sustenance. Dimensionalities foster these revolutions whether stripped of phenomenal consciousness or otherwise enabled with or through it. And thus non-revolutionary infinitesimal progressions become difficult for me to envision because these are done through the linearity of time in the first quadrant. There is an envisioning of time I must introduce you to. It is that which brings phenomenal consciousness back to its coherent self. And the vectorial path for this is neither qualitatively nor quantitatively repetitive. It is a buffer circuit, so to speak, a memory registry where the corresponding fourth to fifth dimensionality interphase interims hold synonymous and coherent relativity between history and existence. This time relativity will be differentiable. And a conscious phenomenal experience is a realistic knowledge devoid of ignorance because it can never be imagined or reimagined relatively to the holder. This time relativity to phenomenal consciousness will be a time curve rather than a timeline. There are two depictions for the time curve. The first is the fifth dimensionality vector space return to first dimensionality from fourth dimensionality. Because this must enable fourth dimensionality potentiality and fifth dimensionality return, it must know coherence and necessitate coherence back to phenomenal consciousness rather than some illusory cerebral shift without grounds in space-time event relevant to the perceptual and conceptual knowledge base. The second is a return to a time-necessitated first dimensionality and such the formation of a first-dimensional time base becomes inevitable. There are repercussions for socio-political representations especially if they are false representation of ignorance projected as scientific knowledge. And science has proven over time, especially the linear progression of such, to be a tool for oppression, prejudice, war, and for the destructive ego of extremely dangerous men. Science can be that war propaganda, one very much which history has it Hitler used for his reasoning for crimes against humanity. With this thought in mind, it is impossible for me not to want a level of estrangement from being obsessed with the luxuries, technological qualifiers which allow such superficial hierarchies. The spirit of one is different from the spirit of the other. Feeding pride to one is feeding lack against the other. Basal life-affirming attributes cannot afford to be superficial for people who value truth and knowledge. If superficiality is allowed to determine human worth, essential life must depreciate in quality. If we dare, we ask wherever is time going in the first quadrant's two-dimensionality space and whatever could be the XYCO finite democracy we're progressing, we are asking about the dangers of selfish and ignorantly projected science. There is grave danger in the science of convenience as no true good can come out of it in the long run. And if we keep asking ourselves about the projection of this CO finite democracy, we begin to realize the irony in it, the individual cannot be represented in it. Based on the foundational knowledge I have taken the time and effort to explicate in this book, we can now explore how this is not just inevitable, it is impossible. It pains me to think that prejudice pervades not because of nature's inclinations towards it, but pride based on superficiality or whatever else humanity can conjure up selectively and prejudicially. Survival of the fittest from my point of view is not the human's primal instinct. It is that of fifth dimensionality, that experience made influential due to a change from a space-time external influence. The primal instinct for an entity is existential. That is, the need to survive does not directly imply survival of the fittest. Any instinct against a prey, for instance, will be a fifth-dimensional necessitating instinct. The first order of ignorance is that its originating space cannot be transformed. And the second order is in the fact that because of its vacuous progression, it cannot deliver the reality of the power it projects. And here we come to our very epitomic example of polio politics. In the x2+1/x2 equation, modern politics bears its forms in ways as notorious as ignorance can ever be. The x component is hugely implicated, but the x component is completely vacuous. Its reality is strictly relative to the y component. It is completely vacuous because it is unrooted and because the side-by-side existence is projected strictly on an upward-forward y. With the knowledgeable rather than ignorant mind, this is a much tenable socio-political environment for the individual and consequently the human. But my analysis of this shows that the socio-political system is fundamentally and foundationally scientifically flawed. In fact, quite ironic when we consider how much effort is thrown into debunking and debasing traditional religious erroneous beliefs. Ultimately, this pursuit of truth involving a lifetime of dedication on my part, I hope with the much needed dedication will generate a different or more equitable coordinate system which can necessitate the full implication of the X-plane and the necessity of the fourth and fifth dimensional reality. All subjects discussed here will be further discussed in future works such as An Animated Life. And these works will be made available free on my website. This groundwork provision of knowledge against ignorance I believe are essential to eventual perceptual and conceptual view of individuality and the universe at large. Edulogics. www.adawlogics.com